Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyarevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 3, Text 14 and 15. 14 is on the board. Aham Mahinduro Niriti Pracheta Samok Nir Isha Pavano Virinchi Aditya Vishwe Vasavota Sadhya Marun Gana Rudragana Sasiddha. Hare Krishna. Aham Mahindra Niriti Pracheta Sabmok Nir Isha Pavano Virinchi Aditya Vishwe Vasavota Sadhya Maru Gana Rudra Gana Sasiddha. Ahamahindro Niriti Pracheta Samok Nir Isha Pavano Virinchi Aditya Vishwe Vasavota Sadhya Mahrugana Rudragana Sasiddha. Mothers. Aham Mahindro Niriti Pracheta Pavano Virinchi Aditya Vishwe Vasavota Sadhya Maru Gana Dudra Gana Sasiddha. Next verse. Anye Chaye Vishwa Srijo Maresha Brig Vadhyo Sprishta Rajastamaskaha Yasye hitam na vidus prishtamaya Sattva pradhana apikim tatonye. Word to word meaning aham. I, Yamaraj. Mahindra. Indra, the king of heaven. Niriti. Pracheta, Varuna, the controller of water, Soma, the moon, Agni, fire, Isha, Lord Shiva, Pavana, the demigod of the air, Virinchi, Lord Brahma, Aditya, the sun, Vishwe, Vishwasu, Vasava, the eight Vasus, Atta, also, Sadhya, the demigods, Marutgana, masters of the wind, Rudragana, the expansions of Lord Shiva, Sasiddha, with the inhabitants of Siddhaloka, Anye, others, Cha, and Ye, who, Vishwa Srijaha, Marichi, and the other creators of the universal affairs, Amara Isha, the demigods like Brihaspati, Bhrigu Adhaya, the great sages headed by Bhrigu, Asprishta, who have not been contaminated, Raja Tamaska, and by the lower modes of material nature, Rajagun and Tamagun, Yasya, of whom, Ihitam, the activity, Navidu, do not know, Sprishtamaya, who are illusioned by the illusory energy, Sattva Pradhana, chiefly in the mode of goodness, Api, although, Kim, what to speak of, Tata, then them, Anye, others. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, I, Yamaraj, Indra, the king of heaven, Niriti, Varuna, Chandra, the moon god, Agni, Lord Shiva, Pavana, Lord Brahma, Surya, the sun god, Vishwasu, the eight Vasus, the Sadhyas, the Maruts, the Rudras, the Siddhas, and Marichi, and the other great rishis engaged in maintaining the departmental affairs of the universe, as well as the best of the demigods headed by Brihaspati, and the great sages headed by Bhrigu, are all certainly free from the influence of the two base material modes of nature, namely passion and ignorance. Nevertheless, although we are in the mode of goodness, we cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then is to be said of others who, under illusion, merely speculate to know God? Purport, the man and other living entities within this cosmic manifestation are controlled by the three modes of nature. For the living entities controlled by the base qualities of nature, passion and ignorance, there is no possibility of understanding God. Even those in the mode of goodness, like the many demigods and great rishis described in these verses, cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, one who is situated in the devotional service of the Lord is transcendental to all the material qualities. Therefore, the Lord personally says that one can understand him, that no one can understand him but the bhaktas, who are transcendental to all material qualities, bhaktya mam abhijanati. As stated by Bhishma Dev to Maharaj Yudhishthira and Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 9, Verse 16, Na hyasya karichit rajan puman vidavidisitam, ya vijignyasaya yukta muhyanti kavayo pihi. Quote, O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord Shri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. That's the end of the quote. No one, therefore, can understand God by speculative knowledge indeed. By speculation, one will be bewildered, muhyanti. This is also confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 3. Manushya nam sarasresu, shu, kashchit yatiti siddhaye, yatatamapi siddhanam, kashchin mam vititatotaha. Among many thousands of men, one may endeavor for perfection. And even among the siddhas, those who have already become perfect, only one who adopts the process of bhakti devotional service can understand Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So the Yamadutas are making a report to Yamaraj about the incident that took place with Ajamil and the Vishnu Dutas. So in making their report, Yamadutas asked three questions we discussed yesterday. Remember? What are the three questions? Okay, Terrence, you go. One. No, just one. Just one. The first question, how many controllers are there of the living entities whose actions are under the gunas? How many controllers give the results of actions under the gunas? Understand? That was the first question. Remember? So all living entities are performing activities under the modes of material nature and goodness, virtuous activities, and passion, exploitative activities, and ignorance, destructive activities. Who gives the results of those actions under the modes? How many controllers are there to give those results? And then he mentions a nuanced point of this question. If there are many controllers and they disagree with each other, then either no one will be punished or rewarded, or everyone will be punished and rewarded. Both. So that will become a problem if there's so many controllers. That was the first question. What was the second question, Michael? Yeah, who the supreme controller? Because, okay, to manage so many living entities, there may be smaller controllers. But above those controllers, there should be one autocrat, one supreme controller. Otherwise, the same problem mentioned earlier comes up. There may be smaller controllers to manage so many living entities, so many karmis who are doing activities in the modes of nature. But above them, there should be one law that they all have to follow, and one autocrat who's the maker of that law. So they had assumed, the Yamadutas had assumed that that was Yamaraj himself, and therefore they're upset that his law was transgressed and he didn't do anything about it. Then what type of master are you? Why I should follow you? You're some big lawgiver, but no one follows your law, and you cannot enforce it, then why I should follow you? Like that. So they were feeling upset with Yamaraj. That was the second question. What was the last question? Yeah, see, everyone raising hands. Yes. Who are the messengers, the Vishnu Dutas? Where is their position? So those three questions they asked Yamaraj. So Yamaraj began answering the question by explaining that yes, there is one who is superior to him. This is yesterday's discussion. That there is one who is supreme above me also, who is controller of all moving and non-moving living entities. Understand? So the idea is that Yamaraj is saying that I am the controller of only a few of the moving living entities. Now, the few, of course, are the lot of jivas who perform sinful activities. I'm only the controller of those moving living entities. I'm not the controller of all the other moving living entities, like the animals and the various devatas. And I'm not the controller of the material nature itself, the non-moving, inanimate nature. So that Supreme Lord, there is one who is above me, who is the controller of all moving living entities and the material nature itself. And his control is so comprehensive that otam protam, he forms the vertical and horizontal threads that form the quilt of this world, so to speak. That was the analogy given, if you remember. If you consider the existence like a quilt, and a quilt is just the threads horizontally and vertically woven together, then Krishna is that. So his control is so comprehensive, namely because nothing exists separate from him. That's how comprehensive his control is. Just like if you have a child, you have a child, you try to control a child, you're not very successful. Why? Because after you create a child, the child exists different from you. He has his own existence different from you. So you may find that it's very hard to control, or you may even create a machine, and sometimes the machines come out of control. Like many movies have this thing where they create technology, and the technology like takes over and so on. Anyway, that's imaginative. But the idea is that you can create something in which you don't have complete control over, namely because it has an existence separate from you. But Krishna's control is so comprehensive, namely because nothing exists separate from him. Just like we were discussing Ishopanishad yesterday, just as you cannot, the reason Krishna is said to be the supreme controller and the supreme proprietor of everything, because he exists like heat and light exist next to fire. You cannot have fire over here and heat and light over there. The two are always inseparable. So Krishna and his energies are always inseparable. And therefore, his control is so comprehensive that no one can think to even dodge it. In the material world, you can, if you're a very clever person, you might perform some criminal activity and think to get out of it. But that is not possible in the control of God, because nothing exists separate from him. And therefore, there is no escaping the laws of God. So then, So then the question comes, then how do we understand topic of free will then? Question, I was thinking about this. How do you understand topic of free will? If Krishna's control is that comprehensive that he has complete control over his energies, including the anima and jivas like ourselves, then how do we have free will? Where is the role of free will in this? This question comes up. So then Yamaraj clarified that his control for the animate entities is just like a bullock cart. The driver of a bullock cart controls his bulls by putting ropes in his nose. Of course, we don't live in India, but we can just try to picture this. You can make picture, image. The bullock cart driver is controlling the bull by keeping a ring in his nose, and to that ring is attached to ropes. So those ropes represent the Vedic injunctions, which is filled with nama and karma, was mentioned. Nama, the names of the various positions, and then the duties in relationship to those positions. So in other words, the living entities do have free will, but their free will is not absolute. This is where living entities get confused. They ask this sort of question also. If God's control is so complete, how does the living entities have free will? Question comes like that. Does it make sense? Can you understand the question? This question comes, how do the living entities have free will? The reason, they have free will, but their free will is not absolute. That is the point. Free will is very minimum free will. Therefore, Krishna gives the Vedas in order to control them. And we can see that, we can easily understand that, because even the free will that we have now is under so many conditions. The way we use our will now is under so many conditions. For example, if you want to fly, can you fly? Right now, if you wanted to fly to India, save yourself a lot of money, at least $1,600 or so. Can you just go and fly in India? Suppose you want to take a nice swim in the deep bottom of the ocean. Can you just go underneath to the bottom of the ocean, take a look around at various types of aquatics that the scientists have yet to discover and so on? You don't have that power because your will is restricted by the material nature itself. So you have will, but your will is restricted. You understand? You don't have absolute free will. The will is restricted. And therefore, God has given the Vedas to help us understand how we can use that will in such a way that we can be progressive. Understand? So he says that, Yamaraj says that God has given the Vedas, which control us, just like the law controls the state, the people in the state. Now, you can follow the law as a free citizen, or you can break the law as a criminal. But everyone is forced to follow that law because your will is limited. That is required in order for the living entities not to destroy each other. If they had absolute free will, then there would be no world. We almost have no world, even with so many restrictions of the material nature. Understand? Those two points Yamaraj made that we discussed yesterday. You understand all these points? Yeah, you have a question.
Hare Krishna, I'm trying to understand this point of free will, because it's always kind of bewildered me. In light of the Lord's omniscience, does the Lord know when we're going to turn towards Him? So basically our free will is, what I'm understanding is we can follow the Vedic injunctions, or we cannot.
Yes.
So what is the determinant factor? Does the Lord know if we're going to do that or if we're not going to do that?
Well, yes, He knows. We can't say that He doesn't know because He's omniscient. And He also knows because He can see how the material nature is controlling living entities. You want to try to logically understand it. Because trying to logically understand omniscience is impossible. You understand that, right? Trying to logically understand omniscience is actually completely impossible for us who have limited knowledge and therefore would not be able to appreciate the unlimitedness of someone's knowledge, such as the case in omniscience. But if you wanted to try to practically understand omniscience in a somewhat logical way, you can say because all living entities are moving under the force of the material nature, He can understand who is going to follow and who is not going to follow. Who is going to follow the authority? Generally, those who are in the mode of goodness follow authority. Those in passionate ignorance don't follow authority. That's a very general categorization. So God, being able to see all living entities, can understand that these living entities are under these modes, they will not follow. These entities under that mode, they will follow. And as far as what inspires that, generally, several factors are there. Culture inspires it. So in previous ages where there was an established culture which was conducive for generating the mode of goodness, engendering the mode of goodness, so it can be understood. Everyone in that culture followed the Vedas, followed authority.
because the culture was mode of goodness. In the Kali Yuga, where the environment is mode of ignorance, the Kali Yuga is known as the age of ignorance, so people don't follow the Vedas. They don't follow authority. In general, they have problem with authority. Why? Because they're under the influence of the mode of ignorance. So the Lord being able to see the existential situation of all jivas can understand exactly what they're going to do. In the mode of ignorance, they will do something destructive. In the mode of passion, they will do something exploitative. In the mode of goodness, they will do something virtuous, like following authority, which is a virtue. So that's a general way that you can try to logically understand that particular element. And as far as his, another factor that will, by which a person turns towards God is mainly the devotees who have power of attorney to distribute Krishna. They are as free as Krishna, and that's coming up in a couple of verses. The Vishnudutas, the Vaishnavas, they are as free as Krishna. So that is itself another incomprehensible thing. Just like Narada Muni has complete freedom. He's just flying around the universe. Just flying around the universe. Just like Krishna has complete absolute freedom. So also Narada Muni has same freedom. And so they have the same absolute power to bestow Krishna upon anyone. So does Krishna know that? In one sense, you can't say he doesn't know that, because that would contradict his omniscience. But in Krishna, there is also a divine ignorance that is there, by which Leela can take place. Otherwise, there could be no Leela. If there wasn't some type of ignorance, there's a good ignorance and a bad ignorance. I understand? The good ignorance allows you to have a relationship with Krishna. The bad ignorance takes you away from a relationship with Krishna. Understand? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur speaks about this in Rabbatma Chandrika. There's a divine ignorance in Krishna in which his omniscience is in the background in order so he can play with the living entities. It's called Yogamaya generally. And so you can play with the living entities. Otherwise, how he will play with the living entities? That's like us trying to play with an ant, I told earlier. How you will have fun playing with an ant. All right, little ant, let's come. We're going to do some fun games together. In other words, God is so great, so infinite, and we are so infinitesimal. How can a relationship actually be established if there wasn't some sort of divine ignorance? A divine ignorance that is generated by bhakti to Krishna. Understand? It is bhakti that covers Krishna's aishwarya, which includes his omniscience and his all-powerfulness and so on. It is bhakti that has the power to cover all of that in Krishna, by which he becomes addicted, even to an insignificant jiva who has the devotion in his heart. So that's a more, don't bother trying to explain that to people. That's totally outrageous notion, because it's transcendental, it's spiritual. But as far as a logical understanding, this is the closest you can get. The living entities are not absolutely free. They're acting under the modes of nature. And so it can be easily ascertained what it is they're going to do. Yamadutas in the second chapter already mentioned this point, that you can generally understand how living entities were in their past life and what they'll be in their future life by looking at their present life. Seeing how much of the modes of nature are influencing them in this life, then you can understand that was the influence in previous life, that will be the influence in future life. So he gives a general way by which you can understand. But the specific way is directly known by Krishna and those he empowered, like Yamaraj. That was mentioned in chapter 2. So that would be the only way you could try to make some logical sense of omniscience in the Lord. And the other point, which is more transcendental, is that the devotee has the power to give Krishna. So does he know whom the devotee is going to give Krishna to? We can't say that he doesn't know. At the same time, there is a divine ignorance in Krishna due to the influence of that devotee's love for him, by which we can also say he doesn't know who's going to actually give bhakti, who's going to be the newcomer to the pack of my giving me sense gratification. You know, what new gift will the devotee bring me in the form of a jiva for satisfying my senses, which is the definition of prema. So we can't say that he doesn't know. At the same time, we can also say he doesn't know, because he's giving power of returning to a Vaishnava. So that's remarkable. Don't try to explain that point to people who have no faith in Krishna. They'll just say, you people are a cult, and go away. Understand? Otherwise, omniscience is itself an inconceivable notion for conditions, for bound jivas. That's inconceivable. Just as eternality is itself inconceivable for jivas who are born, you know, who experience past, present, and future. They experience time and past, present, and future. So when you talk about an eternal present, that's inconceivable. So Jiva Goswami says that point we have to appreciate when speaking about God, that there's a chintya element And all the and any part of discussion about God, the Enchante element will be functioning. Only then will you be able to understand something. And, you know, at least enough to engender bhakti to Krishna. And by which you can worship Krishna in devotion and get direct perception of all these truths. Understand?
Hare Krishna.
Also on this topic, I was hoping you could discuss to what extent is Krishna reciprocating with the desire of the living entity in his controllership?
In his control, well, whose controllership?
Krishna's.
Krishna's controllership. So what is the question again?
To what extent is he just reciprocating with the desire of the living entity?
Well, he's Samoham Sarabhuteshu Namedvesho Sinapriya. Krishna isn't really that concerned about what's going on with the conditioned jivas. I've been making this point quite a bit in the recent classes. Samoham Sarabhuteshu Namedvesho Sinapriya. In his relationship with the cosmic manifestation, including the conditioned souls within it, Krishna is unconcerned, believe it or not. Samoham Sarabhuteshu means he sees everything equally. He's not favoring anyone, he's not against anyone. But then why do we see unequal conditions in the material nature? So this question is brought up. Because that is due to the influence of their beginningless karmas, by which these different situations come up. So what is the reciprocation? Well, what is your karma like? Okay, here's some uparupta karma coming up, you know, to parupta, fructifying now to the parupta state. That's it. That's all in terms of his controllership in relationship to the material nature. It's just like, what's your karmic actions like? Okay, you have some desires, but you also have the fruits of your karmic activity. So I will facilitate that only. That's the extent of it. Only yeba janti tumam bhaktiya. But when you get bhakti, then there's a partiality Krishna shows towards bhakti. So towards the material nature, he's neutral. Towards those who have devotion, he's partial. And in that way, Krishna's reciprocation really becomes a topic. Otherwise, reciprocation for those who are not devoted to Krishna is not really a topic, because it's just the influence of their beginningless karmas, which is also Krishna's energy controlling them, but indirectly, not directly reciprocating with them. He's unconcerned about conditioned souls, so to speak. And even his concern that comes out, we hear Krishna comes out of compassion for the... But that compassion follows the compassion of Vaishnavas. Actually, Krishna comes because of Vaishnavas who are suffering separation from him. And he wants to taste that love that the Vaishnavas have for him. Prema rasa niryasa karite swadana. So after tasting that, after experiencing the love that the Vaishnavas have for him, he feels inspired to broadcast that. So that becomes his compassion towards the jivas of this world. But it follows his wanting to comprehend his devotees. So really, Krishna is really unconcerned. And his concern really only follows that of devotees who do have some concern for the conditioned souls, especially those who have attained siddha from the conditioned state by dint of their previous experience of conditioned life. So they can remember that like a nightmare, and they have compassion for jivas. And that and Krishna's compassion follows that. So there's no direct reciprocation. This is the last question for now, because I'm going to get to the actual today's verse. I only recap yesterday's discussion. And move a little forward.
I was just wondering quickly if you could maybe explain because I was thinking about how the modes of nature are influencing our mind and intelligence to act in a certain way and think of the world in a certain way. And I have this experience of sometimes, you know, having a certain conception, but then also seeing how the mind is working under the modes of nature, going here, going there. So my question is...
Having a certain conception of...
Like having a spiritual conception.
Okay.
But then seeing the mind going here and there, you know, and then the intelligence also working to pursue the mind. But then also at the same time, having a third sense of a reality within, you know, that, oh, this spiritual conception is also there. So I'm just wondering, for the sadhaka, is his consciousness basically non-different from the mind? Or is his consciousness, you know, does he have a sense of a spiritual consciousness? Or is it all just, you know, mixed in with the mind and intelligence?
Yeah, the sense was... Anyway, to the degree he's identifying with the gross and subtle body, to that degree his consciousness is more or less like the mind and the conditioned mind and intelligence. It depends on the degree of identification with matter. And then if there's less identification, then more of the spiritual consciousness is manifesting. More identification, less of the spiritual consciousness is manifesting. So we may have a spiritual conception which is not strong because of being newbies to the process. And so to that degree, we're identifying with that body. To that degree, our consciousness is just the mental transformations moving us about in the material energy. So it depends on the degree of identification with matter. Okay, so then today's verse, finally, today's verse. So then the question was, how many controllers were there? That was first question. Yamaraj said that God is above me. In this verse, he says God is actually above everyone. He's clarifying. How many controllers are there to give the results of actions in the gunas? Actually, there's only one controller in the ultimate issue, because there is one law that governs everyone. And even if there are smaller controllers to give the results to persons with actions under the gunas, they're doing so only under that superior law of God. So he is superior to all other entities also. Not only to me, whom you were wrongly thinking was the supreme. Yamaraj made that point earlier. Not only to me, who you were thinking was supreme, but also to everyone else. So don't be confused. It is not anyone else that you may be knowing. Varuna, King of Heaven, Indra, Chandra, Soma, Shiva, the Rudras, the Siddhas, Brahmas, Surya. So many names he's giving. God is superior to all of them. Understand? And he says here, yes, Ashprishta Rajas Tamaska, in the second verse, that we are certainly free from the lower modes of nature. Understand? There is no Rajagun Tamagun in us predominating. There is no Rajagun Tamagun in us predominating. Sattva Pradhana, we are predominated by the mode of goodness. That means we are very virtuous living entities, having so many qualifications. But even that is the case, still we cannot know God. Why we cannot know God? What's the answer? Simple answer. Why we cannot know God? Because he's beyond the modes of nature. So even if you are in the Sattva-guna, very virtuous person, God is beyond the modes of nature, so you cannot know him. Simple. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tri bir guna mayer bhavari bi sarvam idam jagat, moditam namijananti mamebhya param avyayam. He speaks of how all the jivas in this world are mohitam. They are bewildered. Why are they bewildered? Tri bir guna mayer bhavari. They're bewildered by the modes of material nature. They're bewildered by goodness also. Goodness is also bewildering. I remember one time my brother, he cracks me up. We were going to Northwestern. Something was really irking me a lot. And I got in the car and I like slammed the door and I was like, people are crazy. You know, and I was like, people are crazy. My brother said in a very casual way, yes, some in the mode of goodness, some in the mode of passion, some in the mode of ignorance. And then I started laughing like anything, because normally you don't think mode of goodness is insanity. But when I said that people are crazy, my brother said, yes, some in the mode of goodness, some in the mode of passion, some in the mode of ignorance. So to be in the mode of goodness is also a sort of insanity. I am a virtuous person. That is another insanity that is going on in the material world. So because Krishna is beyond the virtuous person, he's beyond the exploitative person, he's beyond the destructive person, none of them can know Krishna. None of them can know what is planned, what to speak of others who can only speculate, others who are in the lower modes of nature. This is mentioned here. Daivyesha gunamayi mamamaya dharataya. Next verse, Krishna says that to surpass these modes also is almost insurmountable. Dharataya. So not only are you mohitam, bewildered, because you're bound by the modes of nature, and therefore not mohitam, not abhijananti, you cannot know Krishna. Because mam ebya paramavya, he's beyond the modes. But also those modes of nature are insurmountable. So what is the hope? What is the hope? Understand? It seems hopeless, isn't it? You are a bewildered person because you're in the modes of nature. You cannot know Krishna also because you're in the modes of nature, because he's beyond it. And those modes of nature are insurmountable. So hopeless. Helpless and hopeless. Understand? Helpless? Shine. Hopeless. Understand? Two things. Helpless and hopeless. So what is the hope? Krishna says, Mameva ye prapadyante. If you surrender to me, surrender is the life air of bhakti. Understand? Just like a body cannot function without life air. Right? Our karmendriyas. Karmendriyas means the arms, the legs, the voice, the anus and the genitals. These are called karmendriyas by which you can do actions in this world. Understand? Then what is the shakti for the karmendriyas? What is the potency behind the karmendriyas? I already told the answer. Consciousness. Modes of nature. Prana. Understand prana. Life air is the shakti behind the karmendriyas. Buddhi is the shakti behind the ganendriyas, the knowledge requiring senses. Prana is the shakti or potency by which the karmendriyas. For example, have any of you ever played a sport and been winded? Where you had to catch your breath, almost you were winded? You have this experience? Maybe in India you don't play sports like this. Football and so on, someone knocks you down and you're winded. So when you have no prana, your body cannot function, understand? So similarly, Bhakti-tetra prana, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Sharanagati is the life air of bhakti. Understand? No bhakti, no Sharanagati, no bhakti, understand? You may have devotion, but without Sharanagati, that devotion cannot move. Understand? So Krishna says, Mameva ye papadyante mayamitam tarantite. If you surrender onto me, that surrenders the life air of bhakti. But that bhakti, someone can come to know me. They can come to transcend the modes of nature. Otherwise, it's not at all possible. So Yamaraj is making that point here. Bhishma Day's verse is quoted that no one can know the plan of Lord Krishna, even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. Why are they bewildered? Muhyanti kavayopihi. The kavis, they are also bewildered. Why are they bewildered? Why would they be bewildered? Yes. They don't have bhakti. Understand? Simple point. Understand? Then Prabhupada quotes this word. Manushana sarasheshu kashe yatati siddhaye yatatamapi siddhanam kashe manveti tatuta. That out of thousands of men, hardly anyone cares for self-realization. That we see today. And out of those who care for self-realization and have achieved siddha, a perfected state, hardly amongst them anyone knows me. Why is that? Out of siddhas, perfected men, they also don't know Krishna. Why? They don't have bhakti. Understand? Simple point. So the simple point Prabhupada is bringing out in the purport. That these great personalities, they sattva pradhana, chiefly in the mode of goodness, but because Krishna is beyond the modes, they cannot know Krishna. What is his plan? How he is controlling everything? What is his desire for living? They cannot know. Only the bhaktas, they have power to know, because bhakti has the power to reveal Krishna. And more powerful than revealing Krishna, bhakti has the power to reveal Krishna's heart, Krishna's desires for the living entities. This becomes an indirect answer to why Ajamil was released. Because according to ordinary religious principles, Ajamil should have been punished, at least apparently so. But the Lord's heart was something different. His heart was different. The disposition of the Lord's heart had changed in relationship to Ajamil. Why? Because he had bhakti. Understand? A simple point. The position of the Lord's heart had changed towards Ajamil because he had devotion. Yes, understand? Before he didn't have devotion. In his youth, he didn't have devotion. He was just a good boy in the mode of goodness. Sattva pradhana. We saw that verse was there. So many lists of good qualities Ajamil had. But he wasn't a bhakta. He may have been chanting names of Narayana also as part of the ritualistic formulas as a secondary supportive adjunct to those processes of karma. But he wasn't a bhakta. Understand? Ajamil was not a bhakta. He was just a virtuous person. Then his virtue was destroyed by hooking out with a prostitute. All his virtue got destroyed. And then after that, he had a son named Narayana. And he was constantly chanting the name of Narayana, and by that constant chanting of the name of Narayana and Namabhas, he developed bhakti. And because of that bhakti, Krishna changed his disposition towards Ajamil. Understand? The point I'm making, can you understand the point I'm making? Hold on. You understand this point that I'm making? The point that I'm making is that here it's being mentioned that no one can understand the Supreme Lord because in his plan. Because he's beyond the modes of nature and everyone's in the modes of nature. Right? That's the point that's being directly made here. But the implication of the verse is that those who have bhakti, they can that bhakti reveals the Lord. And more importantly, it reveals the desire of the Lord. It reveals the heart of the Lord towards other entities. That bhakti reveals that. And therefore, the Vishnudutas knew the heart of the Supreme Lord in terms of his relationship with Ajamil. Understand? They knew the Lord's heart had changed in relationship to Ajamil because he had bhakti. Only bhakti can give that revelation. Others who are under the modes of nature, who are without bhakti, they cannot understand this. Therefore, the Yamadutas did not understand this. They're in the mode of ignorance. So they got bewildered. Why is this taking place? They got bewildered. Of course you're bewildered. Of course you're bewildered. You don't know the heart of the Lord. Well, how can I know the heart of the Lord if he's beyond the modes of nature? You can't. Only if you have bhakti you can know. And that bhakti will reveal Krishna, and it will reveal the heart of Krishna. Then you can know. Then you would not have made this mistake. The Yamadutas would not have made this mistake. But because they are without bhakti, they do not know the Lord, they do not know his heart, his desire, therefore they made this mistake. Understand? That point is being implied here. So you want to clarify something?
The point you're making makes a lot of sense. Just want to understand more clearly, within this comment about those who have bhakti, the idea of stages of devotion also, because we understand that Ajamila was chanting Namabhas, but by chanting the holy name repeatedly, he developed some devotion, but it wasn't exactly pure devotion yet. And yesterday in the van, we were talking about how one who has conquered the mind is able to communicate with the Supersoul, and you described that happens at the stage of Ruchi, when one has given up all allurement to the material energy. So we're saying that one who has bhakti, Krishna reveals his heart to such a person, and he knows the Lord's plan. So are we speaking of somebody who's practicing bhakti? Or are we speaking of someone who's attained perfection? What are we speaking of?
Well, in context, I was speaking of the Vishnu Dutas. The Vishnu Dutas knew the heart of Krishna, Narayana. Why they know his heart? Well, one reason is because they're like literally beyond the modes of nature. They live in Vaikuntha. And because they have supreme devotion for Krishna, topmost devotion for Krishna, so they knew his heart. So they knew the Lord's disposition towards Ajamil. And therefore they came and stopped the Yamadutas and they chastised them, say, you have made a mistake. They said, no, this man is such a sinful person, he should be taken to hell. And the Yamadutas said, no, you have made a mistake because the Supreme Lord has changed his disposition. But they said, who is the Supreme Lord? Yamaraj is the Supreme Lord. He is told like this. And Yamaraj is saying, I'm not the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is another, and no one of us can know him also because he's beyond the modes of nature. The Vishnudutas can know. And they knew his heart, therefore they chastised you. You made a mistake. That's the point that I'm saying, that's being implied to. Well, it depends on how you're serving. Understand? You understand my point? Can everyone understand? What's my point? Manoj, what's my point? Yes. Understand? Whereas others, they cannot know because they're in the modes of nature, they're devoid of bhakti. Therefore, they will make these mistakes. They make these mistakes because they don't have bhakti. They're not beyond the modes of nature. Understand? So we also will make so many mistakes like this. When our bhakti is like Ajamil's bhakti, Ajamil had bhakti without even knowing he had bhakti. And so that little bhakti we have and we're influenced by modes of nature, we also make this mistake. Understand? Because we are not beyond the modes of nature and we do not know the heart of the Lord, we will also make mistake in analyzing devotees. I know all of you judge devotees, isn't it? During japa period. Japa time is prime time for... prime time, 7 o'clock. Prime time for making judgments, casting judgments on everyone. The rest of the time we're in our bubbles, we don't see each other. Japa is prime time. So you also make this mistake. That's the point, understand? If you're under the modes of nature, your bhakti is nil or very less, like Ajamil, very less. But developing, then you also make this mistake. You'll be chastised, like the Yamadutas has been chastised, understand? You'll be chastised by Krishna. He'll punish you. Understand? Understand? Any other question? Comment? Chinmoy, Peru. I only have 15 minutes because we have the Brahmacharya meeting today. And I have 2 more verses to cover. Actually, 3.
In the last class, you told that bhakti is like doing service to Bhagavatas. So reading Srimad Bhagavatam is also bhakti. So these demigods couldn't understand the activities of Lord Krishna. So they are not doing bhakti, means is Srimad Bhagavatam is not accessible to them. And if it is accessible, then how should one read to develop that bhakti?
No, their first of all, their Bhagavatam is bigger than our Bhagavatam. We hear like this. Their Bhagavatam has like 18 million shlokas. Wow, what a Bhagavatam that must be. But they're, like us, are mixed devotees generally. Because of the mode of goodness, they want to enjoy. They're attached to that. Mode of goodness binds a living entity, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, because of attachment to it. You're attached to the happiness and the knowledge that comes from mode of goodness. So they are mixed devotees also, just like we are, many of us, mixed devotees. They are also mixed devotees. So that mixture blocks that level of revelation of the Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord will not give information of his heart to anyone and everyone. Therefore, bhakti is called a sudurlabha, rarely attained. It's rarely attained because of two reasons that is mentioned. Reason number one, because if you don't have a sakti, then Baba will never come. That was the first reason given by Rupa Goswami. Reason number two, even if you have a sakti, attachment, deep attachment to the Supreme Lord, and that's that a sakti, attachment, becomes very deep, the Lord will not agree to reveal, give you that amount of control over him. Baba gives him a lot of control. So therefore, being mixed devotees, you cannot have that level of revelation, like the Vishnudutas have. But they have devotion also. And they also must do some Bhagavatam Katha like we do. But we like Krishna also, we like sense gratification also, both things. Isn't it? We like Krishna, we also like sense gratification, both. I like it both. So the demigods are like that, they like it both. A little sense gratification also, some Krishna also. I have no problem with worshiping Krishna. Like the atheists in this world, they don't want to worship Krishna. Demigods, I don't have any problem worshiping Krishna. I want my sense gratification also though, both. Two things. Not Ananya Bhakti, exclusively Krishna, no other. Both. Understand? We'll go to the next verse.
Yambai Nagobir Manasa Subirva Ridha Girava Subrito Vichakshate Atmanam antar hidi santam atmanam chakshur yatai vakritayastata param.
Translation: as the different limbs of the body cannot see the eyes, the living entities cannot see the Supreme Lord, who is situated as a super soul in everyone's heart. It's a nice verse. Not by the senses, by the mind, by the life air, by thoughts within the heart, or by the vibration of words can the living entities ascertain the real situation of the Supreme Lord. So he's giving an example of his previous point that he just made. Understand? This is an example. Purport: although the different parts of the body do not have the power to see the eyes, your hands cannot see your eyes, can it? So just as the different parts of the body do not have the power to see the eyes direct the movements of the body's different parts, isn't it? The legs move forward because the eyes see what is in front of them. And the hand touches because the eyes are touchable entities, see touchable entities. Similarly, every living being acts according to the direction of the supersoul, who is situated within the heart. As the Lord himself confirms in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, verse 15, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matashmitir jnanam apohanam cha. I am sitting in everyone's heart and giving directions for remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. End quote. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, it is stated, Ishvara sarvabhutanam hridesha arjuna tishtati. Quote, the Supreme Lord as a super soul is situated within the heart. End quote. The living entity cannot do anything without the sanction of the super soul. The supersoul is acting at every moment, but the living entity cannot understand the form and activities of the supersoul by manipulating his senses. The example of the eyes and the bodily limbs is very appropriate. If the limbs could see, they could walk forward without the help of the eyes, but that is impossible. Although one cannot see the supersoul in one's heart through sensual activities, his direction is necessary. So this is an example of how comprehensive the control of the Lord actually is. This is an example. So your legs, your limbs of the body, like your hands and your legs and so on, they cannot move without the help of the eyes. Understand? Without the help of the eyes, you cannot do anything. It is the eyes that tells you where to walk. It is the eyes that tells you what to grab for your sensual gratification. It is the eyes that tells you everything. Without eyes, you cannot do much. If you go deep into this analogy, you say, well, what about a blind person? Try to understand the analogy. All right, try to understand. Don't start asking those type of questions. Well, Prabhu, what about a blind person? Analogy to help us understand something subtle, okay? So that type of question should not come up as an analogy. So just as you cannot move without the help of the eyes. So also we're saying here, the Lord's control is so comprehensive that no living entity could do anything without the super soul. Understand? No one can actually do anything without the super soul. And verses being quoted, if you had no knowledge, if you had no memory, you cannot do anything. You cannot function without memory. Think about it. Suppose every morning you woke up, you couldn't remember your name. Then problem, isn't it? You remember your identity. Suppose that happened. Then problem. They have amnesia. I'm sure you've seen movies with people with amnesia and so on. The big problem is there. Suppose you didn't have any knowledge of how to pursue certain activities. You need certain specific knowledge. Then you cannot function. Prabhupada one morning on the morning walk asks, I think Satchinanda Maharaj tells a story in the Prabhupada memories. Prabhupada was on the morning walk with the devotees and he asked the devotees, how does a bird know how to fly? Because if he doesn't, no one is teaching him. The mother doesn't exactly come up, okay, now follow my lead. And then the bird starts following the lead of the mother. It's not like that's not. No, you've never seen Animal Planet that birds learn how to fly like that. Mom says, come, follow my lead. Now go like this. Come on, junior birds. Everyone follow me. And all the you don't see like that. So Prabhupada asks this question. How does a bird know how to fly? It's a very interesting question. How does a bird know how to fly? So Satchinanda Maharaj says, one devotee immediately said, instinct, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no. Super soul. That was a rascal answer. Instinct. That's the answer of the scientist. Instinct, Prabhupada. He said that's a rascal answer. The right answer is super soul is giving that knowledge, how to do these things. Isn't it? Also, child. Child is learning so many things without anyone directly teaching him. Like language. How child picks up language. No one is teaching him anything, grammar, this, that, and the other in the beginning. Language is such a complicated thing, actually. First of all, science is also bewildered. Why are there so many languages? That is itself very bewildering. The Bible has its account. You know, there was that some town was cursed and they were trying to, anyway, I'm not going to go into the Bible story. You may be familiar with the Bible account of why there's so many languages. Science is also bewildered. Why are there so many languages? And also to try to teach a robot to learn language is very complicated. Siddha Hari Prabhu was telling me that they've been trying to do some experiments like this to get a robot to learn to be able to learn language, not program to already speak things, but to be able to assimilate languages, is like nearly an impossible thing. So how is it that what scientists with their big, big brains cannot do, one little child is easily able to pick up any language he is learning very quickly. How he's able to do that? What is the answer? Super soul, understand? Without super soul, you cannot learn anything. You cannot remember anything also. And you cannot forget things also. You need to forget things to function also, isn't it? So forgetfulness is very important. Of course, many times we have the wrong type of forgetfulness. We forget Krishna and do sense gratification. That type of forgetfulness is not helpful for us. But many times people ask this question, many times newcomers, if we have so many past lives, why can I remember anything? First of all, that is a rascal question. You cannot remember anything even from your youth. We'll just speak of a previous life. But the point is that the reason you cannot remember anything, the actual answer is the mercy of the super soul. It is his kindness upon you that you don't remember. Suppose you can remember all the traumatizing things that happened in all the lives that you had since beginningless time. And then how you will function? This life, you'll just be like this. You cannot do anything. You'll be functionless. So that sometimes people ask this question, why can I remember anything? We should tell them, it is the kindness of God upon you. Suppose in this life you are a virtuous person, very virtuous, very outstanding morals you have, but you can remember how you murdered someone for not satisfying your sense gratification in previous life. How much you would be damaged in this life? This life you are a virtuous person, in previous life you are a mode of ignorance person, and you can remember all the things you did in mode of ignorance. You supported the genocide, you yourself personally killed thousands of people. Suppose you can remember that, how you could function? So super soul's mercy is to block certain things out also, isn't it? And also, when we are irritated with God, which happens to the conditioned souls, then he said, okay, I'll block me out also. No problem. And you can do your sense gratification. Because sometimes people are like, I can't, I want to enjoy, but I'm feeling guilty because there's a God. You know, if only I could forget God. Oh, Krishna said, okay. Not this life, because you're too much into it. Next life. Next life, I help you. Now remember me also. So the point is being made here, how is it that our limbs are able to function because of the eyes? So similarly, we are able to function in this world because of the super soul only. That's how comprehensive his control is. Understand? Yamaraj gave an example of his previous point. And it also the previous point was that none of us can actually know Krishna because he's beyond us. So also, although he's maintaining us at every step, we cannot know Krishna. Mayatutamidam sarvam jagarav yaktamurtina. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that I pervade this whole universe as a super soul in order to maintain it. We already given examples how he's maintaining. Well, why don't we see that? If someone is maintaining something, you can see it easily, isn't it? Just like Daita Prabhu pervades this whole temple in order to maintain it. Daita and Jatindriya. No Daita and Jatindriya, everything, the thing will be falling off the ceiling and so on. So they pervade this whole temple in order to maintain. But we can see that. We can see that. And therefore, we offer our respects. But Krishna, he's pervading the whole universe in order to maintain it, but no one can see that. Why? Jagat avyakta murtina. Because my murti, my form, is beyond sensual perception. So that's being made here. Manasa asubirva hridagira vasubrito vichakshute. Krishna is beyond the ganindriyas, the knowledge acquiring senses. He's beyond the karmindriyas, the working senses. He's beyond the mind. He's beyond hridagira. It's translated here as thoughts in the heart. He's beyond the vibration of words also. Vasubrito vichakshute. Understand? So avyakta murtina. Krishna says that also in Gita. I'm not perceivable, although I pervade everything to maintain it, you cannot see me also, because I'm beyond sensual perception. Again, Ganendriyas, Karmendriyas, that's being mentioned here. So you cannot know how I am doing so. So although super soul, as super soul, Krishna's control is totally comprehensive, no one can know that, because he's beyond the material world, beyond the knowledge of consciousness, etc. But there is one person who can know that, that person who is, what's the answer? Who has bhakti, understand? That person can know. That point becomes a very important point in the next series of Yamaraj's thoughts. The person who has bhakti, he can know all these things. And more than knowing all these things, he can know the heart of Krishna. Because he knows the heart of Krishna, Krishna's desires for other living entities, Krishna's predilections towards certain living entities, then if you understood that, you would not have made this mistake. We would not have made this mistake of trying to bring Ajamil in. But because we didn't have bhakti, namely, he's being humble. He has bhakti, he's a Mahajan. But in his humility, he is speaking like this. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points this out. In his humility, he speaks like this. We cannot know because we're devoid of bhakti, therefore we made this mistake. And you made this mistake of thinking, I am supreme. You made this mistake of transgressing the heart of the Lord. Understand? You transgressed the heart of the Lord. Just like, who is this personality? Durvas Muni. Durvas Muni tried to kill Amrish Maharaj. She was so mad with Amrish Maharaj, she pulled the Sika out. Sometimes, and created a fire demon with a Sika to kill Amrish Maharaj. That's some heavy anger management issues. Pulled the Sika out, you know, and then created a fire demon to kill Amrish Maharaj. So that way, Krishna didn't like that, so he sent one chakra to kill Durvas Muni. Eye for eye. Eye for eye because the devotee is Krishna's eye, Krishna's heart. So when Durvas Muni goes to Lord Narayana, Lord Narayana himself says, the devotee is my heart. And I'm the heart of the devotee. So Prabhupada comments in that purport that by this statement we can understand that Durvas Muni wanted to bring damage to the heart of the Lord because the devotee is the heart of the Lord. So he wanted to bring pain to the heart of the Lord by trying to kill Amrish Maharaj. So the Lord didn't like that, so he took action in the form of a chakra. Similarly, in this pastime, the Yamadutas have transgressed the heart of the Lord by trying to bring Ajamil to hell. And therefore, the Vishnudutas, knowing the heart of the Lord, chastised them. Understand? That's the relationship. Important point. That becomes a very important point in the next series of thoughts. Are there any final questions? It's 8:30, so we have Brahmacharya meeting. Are there any final thoughts, concerns? I did my best to explain. All so many subtle things, you cannot explain everything perfectly. I'm limited. Everyone's good? Well, I'll be able to tell later on. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.